Another late night edition of Jay's Talk, Jay's Talk After Dark here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali with you. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give me a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. You can also text me as well, 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. It is always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. The Blue Jays win the series. They get a 6-1 win over the Angels after the 4-2 win last night. They aim for the series sweep tomorrow. That is always good to see. Certainly, I know a lot of people who text in and call in. They say, well, show, you got to take these things with a grain of salt because the Angels are a team even worse than the Blue Jays. This is true. But I do think in a season that has been lacking a lot of the things to cheer for, I think you can get excited, or at the very least appreciate. Maybe excited is a strong word, but appreciate when the Blue Jays do win big games, or at least win with big performances. I feel like we have to start with Kevin Gausman. No, 7 innings, 6 hits, no runs whatsoever. 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. He threw 106 pitches, 65 of which were strikes. It's kind of wild to say this about a guy who finished with 7 innings of allowing no runs whatsoever. But early on, he looked like he was somewhat battling his command in this game. It's obviously uncharacteristic of him overall, although this season has been kind of a topsy-turvy one for him. I'm willing to guess the heat was at least a small factor. I'm not saying that's an excuse, but I do wonder. It was about 27 degrees in Anaheim tonight. So again, I think that's at least a little part of it. The velo on average was down on more or less all of his pitches, especially early on, by about 1 to 2 miles an hour. But he did pick it up as the game went on. It's something we have seen him do before, including in this season. So I don't think it's something to really worry about. He induced a ton of grounders. Especially, he got the double play with the bases loaded and just one out. He got some help from the defense, which, of course, you need from time to time. But ultimately, he did not allow a lot of really hard-hit fly balls. And the ones he did allow in the air were well within the park. Like, the one that comes to mind was the Ohapi flyout and the bottom of the fifth. There were 2 runners on, and that ends things to Springer out there in right field, at the time at least. And we'll get to Springer in a second here. But he got through it, right? That's what you want to see. He largely stayed four-seam fastball splitter in terms of the split of pitches, as he has for so much of the season. 59 fastballs, 34 splitters. He threw 9 sliders, 4 sinkers as well. So I'm not sure we'll see a ton more sinkers from Gausman in general going forward, but it is good to see him get a bunch of strikes with the fastball. 68% strike rate with the four-seamer, 59% strike rate for the splitter. Got a fair amount of whiffs on both of those pitches as well, which obviously is good considering how heavily he uses both of them. So, you know, good to see him pick it up command-wise and velo-wise in the last few innings after some early issues. We also have seen this from Gausman a couple times, especially when he's nearing the end of an outing and he kind of knows it's towards the end of his night. He got up over 100 pitches tonight in the 7th inning, and you kind of thought to yourself, all right, like, how much has he got left in the tank here, especially on a really hot night? I think that's actually underlined. I mean, Ryan Burr came in after him, and he was drenched. Like, that guy was dripping sweat. So I'm willing to say it was at least a factor. But, yeah, ultimately, Gausman, he upticked the velo because I think he knew he only had a couple more pitches left in him, or a couple more batters, let's say. So I was very impressed with how he ended his outing, especially after how things started. This is from Chris Black, but 7 innings in back-to-back starts for the first time since May 16th and 21st of 2023. So he actually hadn't turned in 7 innings in back-to-back starts all season until these last couple of starts. The last time out against the Baltimore Orioles. And this is also from Sportsnet Stats. In the last 9 games from the Jays starting rotation, they have a collective ERA of 2.60, a whip of 0.94. The opponent's batting average was held to 194. And they have 53 strikeouts in 55 and a third innings pitch. That is tremendous. That is exactly what the doctor ordered when it comes to The bullpen, certainly. I mean, you know the kind of bullpen the team has, and the bullpen largely acquitted themselves pretty well today, all things considered. And I mean, is that, in terms of the starters, going to stay the case for the rest of the year? Probably not, I would say. But it's a good start with a lot of games ahead following the Thursday off day. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line, and it is always open. Let's read some text. 590-590, name and location. This one's from Kyler in Woodstock, Ontario. Kyler, hope you're doing well this evening. Thanks for staying up late, by the way. Kyler says, I cannot wait for these umpires to be replaced by robot umps. I know the play George got ejected on wasn't over balls and strikes, but it's just another example of how pathetic umps are nowadays. He clearly said something to agitate Springer, and for no reason, George wasn't even being disrespectful to begin with. Yeah, I think it's maybe arguable, but I agree with it's dumb. A complete clown show. MLB should be embarrassed. Completely pathetic. That is from Kyler. I appreciate the exclamation marks as well. We should talk about George Springer. Certainly. We'll get back to the bullpen and talk about Vladdy and Wagner and Horwitz and so on. Certainly. But top of the seventh inning, Kenny Rosenberg pitch looks pretty clearly like it went off his right toe. The really slow-mo, really clear replay. Whether you're watching on Sportsnet, whether you're watching on Bally Sports West, which is the Los Angeles Angels feed, it looked like even as Springer pulled his toe back, the ball clipped his foot. You can actually even see his foot move from the impact. And certainly the other thing too is if the ball didn't hit Springer, Ohapi would have caught that ball. It was going right for his glove, and then it clipped his toe, clearly hit him. The Jays challenge after Gonzalez says it did not hit him, goes to New York for replay review. Replay review in New York says it did not hit his foot. And then Springer loses his ever-loving mind. You're doing some lip reading here, right? But you could see him, right before he goes crazy, you could see him say, that is an awful call. I think he said awful a lot. He said horse bleep quite a few times as well, self-censoring myself to not get in trouble. But I'm not sure, and this is to Kyler's point, I'm not sure what Manny Gonzalez said to him, but he gave him a pretty quick hook for a guy who did not, you know, throw it. We saw this earlier in the season, right? When I think it was Bo who got ejected in San Diego. No, was it Bo? Yeah. And then, or maybe a different point in the season. And then it was Jerickson Profar who got ejected in San Diego. But you know, you look at a guy who did not throw any equipment beyond some general belly aching. And I know there are rules around arguing calls after replay review makes their decision. But again, to Kyler's point, it seems also pretty evident that something was said between the two that led to a quick ejection. All because you just never see Springer lose his mind like that. I know he was ejected earlier this season, but just overall, even when you can clearly watch on television, on the telecast, that he does not like the call. He generally speaking, he like grouses a little bit, then he walks back to the dugout. Schneider has come out of the dugout a couple of times to kind of protect his guy, but he's a pretty even-tempered dude, right? So to see him be restrained or need to be restrained by both Schneider and then Vladdy was like an offensive lineman, like blocking the D lineman, essentially trying to spring. It was so incensed. It was wild. Like he goes in the dugout, he throws his helmet around. He just went from like 0 to 100 in like 4 seconds. So that leads me to believe that something was said to him out of the normal that really incensed him. Like he went from being kind of mad to ready to murder Manny Gonzalez on the spot. And I just feel like you don't see that from many players, period. Like guys complain, but you don't see them lose their minds and go ballistic like that. So I do wonder what was said. If you're watching on TV, you likely heard what Buck and Caleb said. Caleb also narrowly avoiding a no-no of his own. So good, well done by Caleb. You heard what Eric and Chris said on our call of the game. Let's hear what the Angels TV call sounds like, courtesy of Bally Sports West during that debacle in the seventh inning.
Call in the field stands. No hit by pitch.
See?
Wow. Toronto loses their challenge.
The reason is...
He's not real happy about that.
Springer's upset, and now John Schneider's going to have to calm him down so he doesn't get thrown out of this game. And now he has been thrown out. And now Schneider's about to get thrown out. Well, it's getting hot here now. And George Springer in the face of the home plate umpire, Manny Gonzalez. And he has to be restrained by his manager, John Schneider, here. Vladimir Guerrero comes over as well, as Springer is still trying to get at the home plate umpire.
I've never seen George Springer this animated before.
Well, and this is the problem with replay and Major League Baseball's replay reviews, because it has to be extremely obvious. And if it's not extremely obvious, they don't overturn them. We've seen it so many times. And now here is a player, George Springer, irate, but he was clearly hitting the foot.
So there you go, clearly hitting the foot. Like, if even the opposing TV call is talking about how it was terrible, when they are even saying it, you know it's not a great call. Like, I know some people were saying that Springer shouldn't go off on Gonzalez because it was the replay center that ultimately made the call and not the home plate umpire. But come on, like, the reason it was even in review in the first place is because Gonzalez missed that call. And then the Jays lost their result as the review as a result of the missed challenge. So I think there is some deserved complaints against both the umpires and the replay center. And again, I'll say this to you, put it another way. There is no way Springer absolutely loses his mind and goes ballistic if he was just pretending to have been hit by the pitch. You know what I mean? Like, if a guy was kind of like trying to sell it to you, I don't know, he'd probably like half-heartedly protest and then eventually go back to the dugout. But there's no way he would go crazy in front of the entire crowd, in front of everyone on TV, in front of your coaches, in front of the umpires, if you were just kind of putting on a show because you were trying to sell it. There's no way. So it's just kind of nonsense, right? I know the whole thing about arguing replay reviews and so on. I understand, but it's just, I've never really cared for the ump show. We talked about it in San Diego again, when Profar got ejected. We talked about it when Bo's gotten ejected, when Springer himself has gotten ejected. Like, I truly believe it's not just a Blue Jays thing. It's kind of like an all baseball players thing. I just have never really liked it. And again, bring me the robo umps. Bring me robo umps as soon as humanly possible, or at the very least the challenge system from the minors, where like you can call balls and strikes, or you have a certain amount of time. I just, there's got to be a better way, right? There's got to be a better way. Let's talk a little bit about the bullpen. Just to wrap up on the pitching before we go back to the text line, let's hear about Ryan Burr. Talk about Ryan Burr and Eric Swanson. So just because we talked a little bit yesterday about how Zach Pop, or I guess last night, how Zach Pop came in, he got the quick hook, and then the next two pitchers you saw in what ended up being a 4-2 win. It was 4-1 when Chad Green came in, but a 4-2 ball game. So a pretty close game from beginning to end, was that they were not playing around. Like, they were not playing around. They deployed their two highest leverage relievers. And Ryan Burr comes in this game after Gausman departs. He strikes out the side, the bottom of the eighth inning. We've talked about this before. And again, I mentioned Green and Cabrera. My circle of trust pretty much only has those two guys in it. The Blue Jays circle of trust, in terms of, I think, who John Schneider is forced to go to, they clearly have Ryan Burr in there. And he took care of business. Like it or not, you're going to see more of Burr. And I said this before, but I do think there is something there beyond 2024 when it comes to members of the bullpen auditioning for jobs in next year's pen. And I do believe Burr has a spot in there. Now, is it as an eighth inning setup guy or a holds guy? No, probably not. You know what? It's not even probably. It's not. That's not going to be his role next year, unequivocally. It might never be his role in any way, shape, or form. But I do think there is a role for him, undoubtedly. Maybe as the sixth guy or the seventh guy in a properly, I'm using air quotes here, properly constructed pen, right? Maybe a multi-inning guy, a two-inning guy when you're up or down by a ton, kind of the way they were trying to use Nate Pearson earlier this season before he got traded to the Cubs. And the Jays, let's face it, the Jays don't have a lot of those guys. It is important to note that Burr does have options, so I'm guessing that we'll be taking advantage of next season, but he will definitely be in the pen in 2025, barring some, you know, like really dramatic reinventions of like 99% of the bullpen spots, which, I mean, honestly is possible. The way bullpens turn over year, it is absolutely possible. I'm not saying it's out of the realm of possibility, but I think there is a role for Ryan Burr in next year's bullpen. On Eric Swanson, he comes in the ninth. Yes, he gives up the solo shot to Willie Calhoun, the home run coming off of all pitches, he throws the splitter. So clearly not all the way back, right? We somewhat already knew that. But yeah, the splitter did not split on that pitch. It was good to see him bounce back with a strikeout. He walks a guy, and then he gets a line out and another strikeout. And I'll tell you what, on the last two outs of the game, the line out and the strikeout, he threw the splitter. So he's clearly working on the delivery of that splitter, or that's clearly a game plan. Pete Walker and John Schneider, probably more Pete Walker as the pitching coach, telling Swanson to go into situations when it's not super high leverage. I mean, he came into the game when the Blue Jays were up by 6 runs. So I think that tells you how they're trying to use Erik Swanson for now, but clearly working on the delivery of that splitter. And again, it's really important considering how effective that pitch when it works. It's funny, even if you count the home run he gave up to Calhoun since returning to the majors, 8 2/3, because of course a lot, he had like a 6.33 ERA when he entered this game, then he gives up the home run. So I can't imagine the ERA is going to look that much better. But if you look at, just his statistics, including tonight, that are after he was brought back to the majors, 8 2/3, 2 earned runs, 7 hits, 4 walks, 6 strikeouts, 4 of those 6 strikeouts coming in his last 2 outings, including tonight. So clearly slowly working his way back, which is great to see. Before I go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. And again, you can give me a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's hear a little bit from John Schneider. I wanted to hear what Schneider was saying, certainly what the conversation was like with Manny Gonzalez. What happened when George Springer got ejected? Let's hear what the manager has to say.
Yeah, probably a little bit of both. I mean, George isn't going to look into the dugout and say he got hit if he didn't get hit. It's pretty clear from our view that he did. You know, maybe there wasn't an angle in New York, you get it. And, you know, I thought it would, you know, there's no need to throw George out there. You know, he was kind of walking away and gathering himself. That was kind of, I think, why he reacted the way he did.
Well, there you go. All right. So a pretty simple explanation, I suppose. But, I mean, you know, ultimately still, I don't think John Schneider is also ever going to throw the umpires under the bus. But ultimately, mainly because it's probably a losing proposition for for any manager. But it's a wild reaction from George Springer. I'll just say that. Let's go to the text line. 590-590, name and location. I see here. Let's see. Sandy in Toronto. Robot umps, maybe, but the human interaction is pure theater. Can't wait to hear the John Boy version of the Springer ejection. It's true. If there's one thing John Boy Media and John Boy himself does very well, it's the lip reading thing. So I am curious to hear. I was still thinking my favorite lip reading thing of the John Boys this whole season was when Aaron Boone got ejected. And I know they do a lot of Yankee stuff because that's their bag. But when Boone got ejected, despite not having said anything to the umpire, and it turns out it was like a fan in the first row above the dugout, the lip reading of that whole incident from all parties involved, absolutely hilarious. So I agree. I also agree, Sandy, that the human interaction component of umpires and managers is pretty fun. That interaction, I gotta say, is one of the most unique player ump interaction, manager ump interactions. Are one of the most unique ones in terms of players and coaches interacting with the referees in probably like any sport. Like how many other like instances in our lives would it ever be considered acceptable to have someone walk like nose to nose and then scream into another person's face? Like that's probably I would be willing to wager none. And you'd absolutely lose that when it comes to if you were to replace them with robots, or you make it like less interaction between these guys. But I don't know. It also really frustrates me when you get situations like you got tonight. I will say 590-590, name and location. Let's go back to the text line. I see one from, let's see, C-Max in Edmonton. Chris saying, hey, show, another great win in Los Angeles or Anaheim. I don't know. Is Anaheim like a suburb of Los Angeles? Is it its own city? Like they're right next to each other. Is it like Toronto and Markham, essentially? Probably, I would say, yeah, Orange County, I guess, as Tom reminds me. So, yeah, I guess that's what it is. But your point is taken, Chris. This is semantics. I think sweep tomorrow. I really like Wagner. Definitely want to see him in the lineup for tomorrow and going forward. There's a text here as well from Dale in Nova Scotia. Dale says, if both Wagner and Horwitz earn a spot on next year's roster, will that encourage a team to play Vladdy at third base, even though it likely costs them more to sign Vladdy? I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, I don't want to see Vladdy play third base. I just don't really want to see it. If I'm being completely honest, I'm not sure he's particular. I know he did it for his entire rookie season. I'm not saying he's incapable of doing it, but I just feel like his position, generally speaking, is going to be, it's going to be at third base, right? Like, even the guy everyone compares Vladdy to in terms, like these days, at least when it comes to the contract, is Rafael Devers, who plays third base. Devers is probably going to get moved to first base at some point in the not too distant future. Honestly, I feel like the only reason he hasn't is because the Red Sox actually have a couple of legitimate options who are probably younger and, I don't want to say better, but it's certainly better defensively than Devers, which is why it hasn't happened yet. But I bet it does happen. But anyways, my point being, I don't think there is a lot of Vlad at third base in the future beyond him, you know, just like occasionally being moved over there, like we've seen the five or six times it's happened this year. But on Will Wagner, he does it again, his first AB. And let me tell you, if you hated us spending a lot of time talking about Wagner last night and you wanted me to pump the brakes after just one game, you're probably going to hate what we talk about tonight. And no, in all seriousness, I thought it was really interesting for Wagner. They're being very respectful of a guy in his first and certainly now second MLB games ever. Fulmer went changeup, four-seamer, changeup, and it was a change that Wagner crushed for the two-run double. It was actually at the bottom of the zone, so while for the changeup, maybe not exactly where Fulmer wanted it, it wasn't the worst pitch I've ever seen. So, again, kudos to Wagner for going down to get it in his very first AB in the game's second Wagner AB. I mean, that was just a terrible pitch from Fulmer, right? He crushed a middle 93-mile-an-hour four-seamer. It was a terrible, awful pitch. And at most major leaguers, I would say, would crush that. But again, good for a rookie to do that in his second career game. And kudos for Wagner for making some solid contact. He just probably narrowly missed cranking his first major league home run. This is actually from our pal Blake Murphy from Jays Talk Plus. I'm certain Blake is going to bring this up in the morning. But Blue Jays with five hits in their first two career games. Danny Ainge in 1979. Lloyd Mosby in 1980, Eric Hinsky in 1980, Davis Schneider in 2023, and now Will Wagner in 2024. And Blue Jays, if you were curious, with six hits in their first two career games, none. But of course, that did not happen for Will Wagner. But still, that's very impressive stuff from him. It's just like a fun part of the latter half of the season. Like, we were wondering what in the hell we were going to talk about post-trade deadline. But ultimately, we do need to see more from Wagner, only because, like, this is where I land on it. Like, it's very exciting, but we have seen some drop-offs after a while from, like, essentially everyone, right, who was called up. Davis Schneider, Spencer Horwitz experienced a mini one, but he did experience one. Ernie Clement experienced one. Leo Jimenez, to a certain extent. Addison Barger, certainly as well. Pretty much every single one of those guys were, how do you put it? Like, they were adjusted to when it comes to major league pitching. So what will it look like when major league pitchers figure out, quote unquote, figure out Will Wagner? Can he adjust back? And if he can, then I'm down with talking about him like we talk about like Horwitz right now, for example. And look how much Horwitz has been on the team for like a good chunk of the season. And we still kind of talk about like, oh, maybe he's only like a 75% part of a strong side of a platoon at second base. And I know I'm the one who's largely saying that. But the point is that I do think you're going to have to see like way more from Will Wagner before you're having larger conversations. But still, like, until then, you know what? Kind of a fun thing to talk about. A fun thing to get excited about, even. Because, yeah, it's a season that has not gone particularly well. But again, I'm not sure I'm ready to do more right this second than to say he has the potential to, look, at best be the short side of a platoon in 2025, or even like a, I don't want to say utility guy, because he's probably only largely going to play like one, maybe two positions. But yeah, pinch hitter, off day replacement, off the bench. I would love to be wrong about that, because good God, we are lacking for fun stories that do not start with the name Vladimir Guerrero Jr. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590, name and location. We've been reading your texts throughout the evening. Still keep them coming on the People's Text Line. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll go back to the text line. And still, if you want to give me a call, you certainly can at those numbers. We'll hear your phone calls, if there are any. I know it's late. And your text line questions on the other side. You're listening to Jays Talk. Show Ali with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Not that I heard, not that Georgie said no. I think initially he just said You know, he kind of got blocked out by Ohapi. He said, just hang here. But I don't think he said anything to George. I didn't hear anything. I was kind of on my way out there.
Because he seemed happy-go-lucky for a couple seconds and then just like...
Yeah, I think it's kind of, you know, he was still kind of, you know, disagreeing. You know, and the rule, we all know the rule, you can't argue a replay call. So competing in the moment, I think, you know, once you get, you know, by rule you get ejected, I think just competitive guy kind of comes out right there.
You know, I never know whether or not to take people at their word when it comes to like coach speak, because he, like, John Schneider could easily be telling the truth. Like, absolutely, he could be telling the truth that maybe there was nothing said. But I mean, again, I said this before, I just don't think it's wise for anyone to come out there and like absolutely just crap on the umpires, especially if there was already some kind of major disagreement. But yeah, it's kind of funny to hear him say that, because like, it just feels like, I think the reason I find it funny is because George Springer has disagreed with umpires many, many, many times. Even if you were just to narrow it to this year, in that stretch where he was awful. Remember that was that stretch where he was like, by OPS, one of the worst, I think he was the worst qualified hitter in baseball for a good chunk of time. He never did what we saw tonight. So I'm not saying John Schneider is lying, but I do find it funny. Like, that's the explanation given, because Springer went absolutely ballistic. But that is John Schneider with more, I guess, on the explanation for why George Springer reacted the way he did. And it was a good question. I'm not sure who asked that question, but that was the question I wanted to know, because he seemed fine for a little bit and then whew, just absolutely went crazy. You're listening to Jay's Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali with you for another 10 minutes or so. Still some time to give me a call if you choose. 416-870-0590. 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. I know it's late, so if it works better for you, if you're texting from your bed, you're snuggled up to your neck in your sheets and you just want to shoot me a text, 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. It is always open. Let's read some of those texts, actually. There was one here. Let's see. There was one here from Steve in North Dundas. Steve in North Dundas. Look, I mispronounced that. Vladdy's personality never changes no matter how he's playing, but it suits him best when he's one of the best hitters in baseball. It's true. I've long said the extracurricular stuff from Vladdy, like when he does like the little like skip, I guess, between, what is it, second and third or third and home or wherever it is, and he does a little motion with his hand. Like, I've never really cared about that kind of stuff personally. I don't think really it makes a huge difference, but it's true. Like, you do feel better about how it looks like from an optic standpoint when he is like absolutely smoking baseballs on a regular basis. Vladdy too. I mean, we can't, generally speaking, I would say, lavish enough superlatives on him, but the pitch from Fulmer that he hammered for a home run was god awful. Like, he hung an 81 mile an hour sweeper right over the middle of the zone. And here's the thing. I only bring it up because how many times in the last few years, not even in this season, but in the last few years, have we seen that exact pitch get grounded to short for an out, or even like a really hard hit double play? And then you guys are like, "Show, why are you talking about the exit velo? Because he hit into a double play." Yeah, fair, right? It's really annoying. How many times have we collectively, and I'm including myself when I say we, whined about Vladdy missing mistake pitches from pitcher like X, Y, or Z? The answer is a lot to both of those questions, right? A lot of times we have done that. So it's nice to see him punishing pitchers for making mistakes. We just did not see a lot of that in the last two seasons from Vladdy, and we have seen it a whole ton over the last 30 games or so. So I do genuinely hope it keeps up. We got to see Spencer Horwitz go back-to-back after Vladdy. That was for the first time we have seen this. If you can believe it, July 23rd actually was not that long ago against the Rays when Vladdy and Turner went back-to-back, but it's actually just the second time, that other instance against the Rays on the 23rd of July being the first time. So it's actually only happened two times all season. I can't imagine like guys going back-to-back happens a lot across Major League Baseball, but I don't know. You just haven't seen a lot of power this year, so it was nice to see. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. Let's go back to it. Let's see. David of the Six. David, thank you for staying up late. He says, tanking for a better pick makes absolutely zero sense in baseball. He spells it with the B, E, accent aigu, I-S-B-O-L. That's how he spells it. If the Youngers trying to make next year's squad push the Jays to a record much closer to 500 by season's end, it could bode well for the future. You know what? I think it would bode well for the enjoyment factor of this season, but I guess I'd have to look to see what other teams are in the mix for the top 10 picks next year. Cause I want to say it was like the White Sox and the Nationals, or there were a couple, or the A's maybe. There were a couple teams that had high draft picks this past year that will not have high draft picks next year because of the way Major League Baseball has disincentivized tanking, right? So to David's point, there is actually no point to tanking anymore. You can't actually really do what the Orioles did and be bad for a whole bunch of years and get top five picks for the foreseeable future. You can't really do what the Astros did, what they did when they built the backbone of the teams that had certainly George Springer and Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa and so on. They can't really do that anymore. So I kind of agree. Like, there's probably there's a sweet spot in terms of how bad you really want to be if the tank is still going to get you a top 10 pick, for example. Because I'll say this, I mean, you're not going to, if the White Sox are in the draft for next year, because again, I have to look it up and I'm not sure if I can find it on the fly, but ultimately the White Sox, you're not going to out tank the White Sox, probably not going to out tank the Angels. You're probably not going to out tank the A's or the Marlins or the Rockies. Like, there are a lot of bad teams in baseball this year, even if the Blue Jays have had a season that has not been what you want. But you're right. I mean, there's no reason to tank going forward, if only because if they get a top 10 pick next year, they will not get, because they're not a revenue sharing team, get a top, or like, they don't receive revenue sharing, I should say. They're not going to get a top 10 pick in, I guess, 2026. So there's no real point to being bad anymore, which is kind of unfortunate. You know, not unfortunate because you don't want your team to be bad, but unfortunate in the sense that it does kind of remove an avenue for making your team better over a longer period of time. Having said that, I don't know if anyone wants to experience 100 lost seasons. I certainly don't. God, can you imagine the Jays talks if we were getting like 100 lost seasons every year? Oh my God. I certainly cannot. More text on the text line, 590-590. Name and location. Dan in Beamsville. I agree with you, Shell, but Guerrero playing at third, I think first is his position as well. I see here one. Yeah, I mean, I think that's just how it is, truly. There was a text here from, this is from Sean in Campbell River, BC, who had texted us yesterday as well. He had said, I think Lo Perfino needs to work on some things at the plate. I will say, I had said towards the end of the pregame show earlier tonight that Lo Perfino just needs to show you something, like anything, to give you some confidence that he can turn it around. Like in the eighth inning, snaps an 0-for-24 stretch to make it 6-0. Also his first RBI as a Blue Jay, so good to see. And again, like, is that going to be the be-all, end-all of this game? Certainly not, but hopefully he can use it as a confidence builder, because otherwise, whether it's him or David Schneider, that left field spot is looking mighty thin these days. So you need something. You need some kind of production out of that spot. Even if they're batting towards the bottom of the order, you need something. And I think Lo Perfido showed you something? Question mark? So maybe that does continue throughout the next little while, because again, one of those two guys playing in left field, especially if Will Wagner is for real, at the very least at second base. Now you have a plethora of guys who can play second and guys who can play at first base. If Horwitz is not playing second, he can play at first. You can DH Flatty. You have a lot of options now. So if that's the case, you don't really need Schneider at second base. So if that's the case, the two left fielders probably are going to be Lo Perfido and Schneider for the rest of the season, unless something really changes. Q from Winnipeg. Priority number one this summer, lock down Vladdy to an extension. The analytics department better not meddle around trying to convince the khakis they can save a few million dollars signing a similar player for less. Flashbacks of letting Edwin go to be replaced with Kendrys Morales because they were similar. Let that be their reminder. Yeah, that's fair. You know, I mean, I will say, I think the difference between Edwin at that stage of his career and Morales was, I don't think it was that great, but I do think that, you know, there is some, again, and this point applies to Vladdy too, that there is some cachet with like franchise greats, right? So was there a point to signing Kendrys Morales when you could have just given Edwin what he wanted and largely gotten the same thing, maybe something marginally better, and just gotten the non-tangible, like non-statistical reward of having re-signed someone that a lot of people like? For sure. That is like tenfold the example with Vladdy, essentially. Like, there is no one you can re-sign in free agency. There's literally no one you can re-sign. Even if you re-signed Pete Alonso instead of Vladdy or something, and you traded him, and I'm not advocating for that, but if you did that, there's no way that Pete Alonso would return you the same value as signing Vladdy. That's just like, there's no way that it's going to be the case, because Vladdy's a homegrown player. People love him. He's extremely talented. He's turned it around this season. Like, his WRC plus is at or near the level of it was in 2021 when he was the runner-up for the AL MVP and only did not win because Shohei Ohtani was essentially two players in one that year, right? So I think we're all on the same page. Let's put it that way. I think we're all on the same page when it comes to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. There was a text here from, let's see, Cooper from Elora. I don't think that it's going to help when the MLB goes to robot umpires. Having human umpires gives the game more emotions and keeps its fun. I think that's probably why the best scenario, like the best, maybe compromise. That's what I was looking for. The best compromise. It's late, all right? It's almost 1 a.m. on the East Coast. But I think the compromise I was looking for, or everyone's looking for, is maybe what they are doing in the minors, where you have like a certain amount of time to challenge a pitch. Kind of like when, you know, a ball goes out of bounds, like a tennis ball goes out of bounds on the tour, right? On the ATP or WTA, right? Or, you know, when you have like the VAR review system and it's pretty quick and it's pretty definitive. And I know people also have their pros and cons of VAR in soccer, but like, it's quick. It's easy. It gives you a definitive result immediately. And that's where balls and strikes. I think it's a little different on like ejections. And for example, and today they did have replay and the replay failed them for some unknown reason. But I think I see the pros and cons of both. Blake has always told me that what you're going to lose also, if you go to robot umpires, is you'll lose the pitch framing element of it, which I suppose is true, but I don't know. I think I've been pretty consistent in saying that I would take the upside of robot umpires, even if it means you lose a little bit. I don't know. Maybe that's probably the least. I feel like I'm a relatively, all things considered, like, let pitchers throw longer. Don't go to the bullpen so soon. I think generally speaking, I like those older things, but this might be the one thing I lean towards the future for. Hey, appreciate all the texts. Appreciate you guys being with me on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crowners Control Centers in Rexdale and Vaughan, Ontario. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Eric Smith, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us. I'm out of here. We are out of here. We're back tomorrow to put a bow on the Angels series. Blair's actually back in action on Blair and Barker on Thursday. He and Barker will have you covered on Friday with the Jays in Chicago. Sleep tight, everyone. We'll talk to you later.